Im Kino zu Hause, der DocFest München Podcast. Filmgespräche des Internationalen Dokumentarfilmfestivals München.
Ja, herzlich willkommen zum 38. Internationalen Dokumentarfilmfestival hier in München. Also a warm welcome to all our viewers and listeners in the digital space. We are here in the Doc Studio in Silbersaal at Deutsches Theater in München. And we have two guests here for the film Free Money, which runs in our Doc Horizonte competition, Cinema of Urgency. Free Money is done by a co-directing duo, Lauren DeFilippo and Sam Soko. So I just shortly introduce you to these two great filmmakers. Sam Soko is a filmmaker from Kenya. He has founded the production company LBX, which is based in Nairobi. And he also is doing films himself as a director, producer, and editor. He premiered with his first film, Softie, in Sundance, I think in 2020. And he presented at DocFest last year the film No Simple Way Home by Aqualde Mabior as a producer. And then we also have Lauren DeFilippo. She works as a director and producer for the New York-based production company Insignia. And she has been named to Doc New York and HBO's annual list of 40 under 40 documentarians to keep an eye on. So welcome with me together, Lauren and Sam, to Munich on the digital screen.
Thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the time for a digital online Q&A. And yeah, first of all, it's great that we have your film in our competition. It's a co-directing effort, so to say. So maybe you can tell us a bit about this project, how you came together, how you found each other, and yeah.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, we originally stumbled upon this massive universal basic income experiment happening in Kenya through a New York Times article, read about it, and we basically got in touch with the organization GiveDirectly that was doing the experiment, and so they were sort of our first point of entry into the world, and, you know, I went to Kenya and did a little bit of shooting, started meeting people in the village that was receiving the UBI, and, you know, quickly just realized I could not do this on my own as a white Westerner with very little previous knowledge of Kenya and kind of the cultural context there. And so I had sort of heard about Soko. I had seen him pitch at Hot Docs and really just liked his style and, you know, reached out. And we had a lot of conversations and a lot of you know, just like a lot of thought kind of going into what a collaboration could look like and if it was something he wanted to join me in on. And, you know, thank my lucky stars, he eventually did join. And he then, you know, it kind of just snowballed in terms of what we could do filming in the village and filming with GiveDirectly in the US and really sort of melding our two cultural perspectives together as we made this film that was so critical to our process.
I think, yeah, like our unique styles and I think the questioning and conversation of what was taking place in like universal basic income as a topic of potential that would potentially make a difference in solving or at least aiding in dealing with global poverty. And at the same time, the idea of experimentation in the African context, I think for me, just sparked so many bulbs. And it was such an incredible privilege to meet Lauren and also just I found like a lot of synergies in our styles and what we were doing. So it really was an opportunity to do something incredible with this film.
Okay, so Sam, was it for you also important to to be with the Kenyan people or the villagers? Did they also, because of you, then more open up? Or
The question of universal basic income as a potential solution in solving poverty just sparked like a lot of light bulbs in this conversation. But at the same time, coming from Kenya with a lot of baggage with non-governmental organizations or nonprofits coming in with interventions, I was incredibly skeptical of the whole conversation. But then here was an opportunity to interrogate this on a deeper level. And Lauren is like such a joy to work with. And I think we felt like a lot of synergies in how we were looking at these conversations and the opportunity that was in front of us. So yeah, just coming into the project was just not only important, I think, to have a macro conversation on what's taking place and just in moving, in adding to the conversation of how to deal and solve questions of poverty in the present and in the future.
Yeah. And my follow-up question would be then, so Lauren, you came from New York and from the Give Directly perspective, and you were asking the hard questions in the New York headquarters. So, and Sam, you were doing like the filming on the ground in Kenya, and you were also, was it important for you to be there in the village and to get in touch with the people, to get their trust, and maybe also to bring in the critical journalists from the Kenyan perspective? Was that the kind of work divide?
I think it was also kind of for both of us. Like we both kind of had the privilege to both be in the village in some instances. Of course, COVID became a huge impediment to that situation. But then at least because I'm in Kenya and Lauren is in the US, kind of helped us keep the production going. But I think it also became important to bring in someone to ask a bit more of the critical questions that a lot of audiences in these conversations were having, even ourselves. And stylistically, we didn't want to be present in the film. And finding Larry was like such a joy because he's in the conversations, like economic conversations and economic change conversations. And he wasn't scared to ask this question. And it was even greater luck that he comes from a place not too far from the village we're filming. So he understands the cultural dynamics and the situation. So that provided us an avenue to engage more critically in this space because it's not a straight arrow conversation. And I think a lot of people try to make it like black and white, and it's not. It's a very complicated conversation. And I think that was important for us to do.
Yeah. And we can see that actually it's not only like a success story somehow what is happening in the village in this experiment of doing giving out money to the people directly. There you have this character of Jael Songa, this girl who somehow is missing out. And I mean, this is like in a fiction film, like as you have written it. I mean, this is such a, you were so fortunate. I mean, that this had happened. I mean, it's sad for her, but I thought it's very important that the viewer can see, okay, it's not only joy. I mean, you also have the jealousy of the other village, but then for her, it's really tough, and you can see that. And my question would be, how did you manage her, and how did you also direct her in her emotions? And because she seems to be so resilient, but yeah, maybe you can tell us a bit more about how you worked with her.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, Soko, you should expand, but I think it took a lot of patience. Jael's kind of someone who is just inherently very reserved and did not want to complain, kind of felt as though like, oh, this is just, you know, the cards I'm dealt and I will deal with it. And so there was sort of this as you're saying, like kind of this resilience, but I think also this like barrier to showing any vulnerability. And so it did just take time. And, you know, sadly, she just waited on GiveDirectly for years. You know, it kind of seems compressed in the film, but it was like 4 years before she really got a clear answer from them about whether she would be receiving the money. And through that, she really made a lot of decisions in order to stay in the village in the hope that she would receive the money that, you know, you could definitely see as something that held her back from other opportunities. And so we were really sort of, we were also trying to get answers from GiveDirectly, and we were also having difficulty. And we were like, if we're having difficulty, we can't imagine what it must be like for this, you know, young girl, this recipient on the other side. And so that was, you know, when it just very clearly emerged to us that we really felt like that power dynamic and understanding that power dynamic in the context of the film between GiveDirectly and the recipients was something we wanted to really express.
Yeah, and it does, her story and her journey kind of speaks to the unsaid power dynamic that exists in any aid intervention system. It's like poor people don't have that level. First, like life has put them down so much that it's very difficult for them to speak up for themselves. They will basically take anything that comes their way that can give them a leg up. And in this conversation is, yes, it's one girl in a very small sample. And we did not anticipate anything. Like, we did not know that she's not going to get the money. And it's us being shocked. In fact, I think initially we just thought it was like this clerical error that's going to be fixed. And it's like this, it wasn't even a storyline that we were kind of following up, because we never thought it would be as big of an issue at the end of the day. But when you get to the third year and you're like, wait, what? They've not really given you a response. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start realizing the complexity and the imbalance of agency when you get to a space of you're dealing with poor people who are at the bottom of the space when it comes to money. And in that case, where would this person go? Even if she wanted to be like, okay, I want to contest this situation, what does she do? And like you said, Jael is someone who's like, it's God's will. You know, it's like God has determined this for me, so I have to accept it. And that's not the case. Like, there should be avenues for her to ask questions. There should be means and ways. And I think kind of highlighted such a big imbalance that plays out, but we kind of put it in the back burner because we like this line for at least we are doing something, you know? Mm. And it takes away so many issues historically that have existed in the development world, which are super important to help people move forward.
Mm. Yeah, I think on her example, or with her example, you can see quite clearly the whole problematic, that it's a really a moral issue, because it is an experiment on the human being. And because I was thinking, oh well, these experiments kind of have been done in Europe as well, like in Finland, and we even I did some research, we even had it in Germany, but this is a different different basis where we are starting from, because we have a different agency and we can sign up for it or say no or check out. And for them, it's so like about survival. So as you say, it's all about the agency and where can they go to? And this would lead to my next question. Then how was this experiment or this project of GiveDirectly perceived in Kenya, and would there be a government where they could go to and ask for help, or would the government say, well, what are you doing here? This is an intervention in our country or something like that. So this were my thoughts then.
So So it's I would say it's very loved and embraced because, mm-hmm. again, because of the social, political, and economic situation, a lot of people need a leg up. A lot of people need support. And like I think it portrays in the film, it totally changed how the village lives and exists because they have something while their neighbors don't. So for a government, that's beautiful because at least there's some citizens who are getting help and they mm-hmm. don't have to deal with these citizens.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think we also felt it important to explore, say, with a character like John, that unless there's investment and transformation in a lot of social systems, like education, like healthcare, the money won't really take people to another space, per se. It'll just put them in a place of good, decent survival, like they can survive. But their ambitions will still be curtailed. All the other things that they're trying to do will still be kept to a bare minimum. So the need, I think the next step is kind of to push for better social systems as an additive, as some where UBI would be supportive of what these other systems do. And in countries like Kenya, you know, with all the issues with corruption, with all the issues that, you know, every other thing that just bundled into everything, the government will constantly tell you we don't have any money. Like, mm. So you're trying to tell them to give money for free. They're like, no, we can't do that because we want to do other things. So it also raises the questions of sustainability mm. in a place where you have a tax base that can't support such an idea. So it ends up being reliant on like an aid system that has its flaws. So we kind of are in a chicken and egg situation where the poor people don't really have a choice.
Mm.
And the idea of development becomes more and more complicated moving forward.
Okay, so would you say then the system of development aid could be like revolutionized with a basic income, or is it just another jacket for the same thing somehow?
And Lauren can say something about this, but I personally, I believe the aid system as it exists is extremely flawed. It's highly imbalanced. It's taken so much power from people, and at the same time, it comes with so many strings that the difference it makes comes at a cost. So it's like, I will do this, but kind of thing. So one thing that is admirable in a basic income is it doesn't have strings attached. So people can do what they want to do, which is amazing. Like that gives so much agency to people. But at the same time, if the money is still dependent on aid, that means it's dependent on, does the government giving the aid like the government that is receiving the aid? If it doesn't, then poor people are where they were, you know. Like what we've experienced in the last couple of years when Trump came to power, with all these right-wing governments coming into space to place, they are reducing the amount of aid that is being given to a lot of these countries. So again, any change in support is dependent on the politics of what's happening in other places.
Mm.
So there's no consistency in transformation. So aid won't be a long-term sustainable solution. So there has to be a way in which we look at interventions like universal basic income from a sustainable point of view. It's like who can implement this in a way that won't change in the long term, so that it's consistent and makes a difference consistently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lauren, maybe from the US New York perspective, and talking also to these representatives of Give Directly, or having in mind the CEOs of Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and so on. Are they kind of taking over the world when they're doing these kind of projects? And because somehow I have, if you think further, then if the money comes from these organizations and the capitalist system, then they somehow, they overrule the government and the politics and the aid system, which is on the government international level. So do we have a kind of shift of power coming up here? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that was something we were very interested on. Like, basically, you know, is this a band-aid to kind of income inequality that we're experiencing, right? By like these kind of big tech moguls giving people money. Are they just sort of trying to keep that complaint down and keep people happy? And, you know, I think that that was something that was really interesting to us. And it's, you know, it's difficult to talk about because the context in the US is so different than the context in Africa. But I think the sort of headline that came across for us on both sides was that if you were to implement a program like this, we really felt like government needed to be a part of it. Like it cannot simply be done kind of with private wealth funding these private projects. I think that's when you get into a lot of these problems of accountability that, you know, we see with somebody like Jael. And, you know, I think as we kind of face this next phase of AI hitting us even harder, this conversation of UBI is definitely going to be coming back around. It kind of is very cyclical. I feel like we kind of get moments where everybody's on board and then it goes and then it comes back, you know, and so I think, you know, our other takeaway from working on such kind of a complex project as this was, I think UBI can be very beneficial. You know, we live in a capitalistic society. When you give people money, it's going to make their lives better. But it just, you know, simply cannot be the silver bullet. There needs to be other infrastructure and other, you know, services in place for populations as well. So, you know, we kind of came away, and this is what Larry Madowo says at the end of the film, you know, it's not the silver bullet, because I think kind of is what you're pointing to as well, is it sort of just perpetuates kind of the income inequality and a lot of the evils of capitalism that aren't really going to go away by, you know, just throwing some cash at the problem. So it's one thing in an array, I think, of things that can be helpful to helping, you know, really both kind of the income inequality of the world, but really now as we face some new challenges, I think, with AI that are going to be
definitely
very dangerous. Yeah,
interesting times coming up for us. And right. And it's so important in these times that you guys make these films and ask these important questions. And so we have the chance to reflect actually what's happening with us and to get on top of things and not be overrun by it. So I think we have to come to an end already. Sorry about that. It's such an interesting conversation. My last question then would be maybe, so the project is still running. What year are we in right now? I mean, it's running for 12 years, but we are like fourth or fifth?
Sixth year.
Sixth year already. So it's halfway through. Are you still observing it? And do you plan maybe to go back when it's finished and do another like recap or finalizing film about it? Or what is your plan?
Yes, like we are definitely keeping in touch with the village. We're definitely following on what's happening. I think the plan is trying to find some level of resource that allows us to not only keep looking at what's taking place, but be present when at least the period where the experiment ends, and maybe at least a year or two after, to see how things are in the village. But at the same time, as Lauren was saying, conversations of AI have kind of exacerbated in a very quick way. So because of we are in the space in the conversation of AI, we are also thinking of of how to keep telling this story and connect it with how it affects. It is right here. It's affecting us right now, you know. So we kind of have to have these conversations in the present moment.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Lauren, do you want to add something for final?
We would love to make a sequel. I think that's our ultimate goal. And I feel like every audience we've been able to share this film with has wanted more, which is just so encouraging. And I think a very positive response overall. And we're just really happy to be able to be out here kind of sharing this film and having these conversations, because that's really why we made it. So thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. The film was very well received here at DocFest. We already had two or three screenings, and I saw one of them was sold out. So it's still screening tomorrow and again on Saturday in our section Best Docs, like one of the favorite films. So yeah, maybe people can catch it again. So thank you so much for this conversation. All the best to you for your future projects, and hope to see you one day in Munich.
Yes, thank you. This is
okay. Also, thank you for all the listeners and viewers outside there in the digital space. Thanks for joining in. And DocFest is still running until Sunday in the cinemas and until the next week also on the digital screen. So stay tuned and I see you soon.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.